Good morning on Tuesday, July 28th, 2015. My name is Brian Medden, and you are listening to another fantastic BrianMedden.com podcast. I am home in San Francisco after being in Briform last week. I'm joined via Skype by Jack Medden, who I presume is in the office today.
That is correct. Good morning.
Also joined by Gabe Knuth from his home in Omaha.
Yep, drink in the air.
Drink in the air, and he also mentioned if we hear any background noise
it's off
at
now.
His place, it's his new 3D printer.
It's off now. I can't make it work. These are hard.
And our guest today is Todd Freiberger, who is the CEO of Star Mobile. So, hello, Todd.
Good morning. Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and today is a sponsored podcast by Star Mobile, and so that is why we'll be talking about all things Star Mobile today. Todd, I met you last week at Bright Forum.
Correct.
And so we were all talking about, you know, that was an intense week and the high altitude was fun. It was very sort of relaxed atmosphere for Bright Forum. It was great. But I didn't know Star Mobile or you or anything before Bright Forum. So first of all, where are you joining us from today?
So I'm in sweaty Atlanta, Georgia.
And then Star Mobile, you know, I just want to kind of jump right into this because I think that you talked in. So I saw your session. So by the way, for those listening, Todd wins the Sean Bass, you know, speaker award because this guy, you know, he gave a 15-minute kind of like a lightning round session, which is just where you. Can you know we've got a bunch of sessions kind of back to back to back and just a taste of what these you know the content is about and then you can go back to their booth and talk more. And I think Todd, I think you put an hour long presentation into 15 minutes.
Well, I appreciate you giving the Sean Bass Award because I've always aspired to be such an astute presenter as Sean. So I appreciate that. But yeah, we really appreciated the opportunity to be at what for Star Mobile was our inaugural Briform. And it was an important step for us because in the journey of Star Mobile, you know, we have seen that there is clearly a need or a demand for the ability for customers who have invested in application virtualization to extend that investment out to new endpoint or all endpoints inclusive of mobile. And as we've, you know, kind of focused on that sweet spot for us here as in addition to where we have been in the core enterprise mobility space, it's been an overwhelming sense of demand and discovery for us as we've particularly gotten to know the personas that are representative of, you know, of your constituents out there. So we found last week to be enormously valuable for us into understanding, you know, the market, understanding the needs, and you know, we're actively bringing that feedback back into our constant improvement cycle around the product and the offering.
That sounds like a CEO way of saying, Bry Forum, tough crowd, but you passed.
Well, we'll see. We haven't gotten the feedback elements and such, but you know what, it is a tough crowd, but it was a great and engaging opportunity. And I'd contrast that. You know, we participate in a lot of events, you know, whether they're focused on mobile, whether they're focused on enterprise applications and such. I mean, you truly have a very passionate constituency. You have a crowd that knows, they certainly know their stuff. And, you know, by golly, it actually pushed me to be on my game from a technical standpoint, in addition to being, you know, a C-level exec. So we found it enormously, you know, worthwhile, and we can't wait till the next edition. So, you know, I hope that your constituents with TechTarget are listening, that we'll be signing that contract sometime soon.
Dude, be careful. Like, this is being broadcast out live, and my boss will literally call me. Like on the phone right now.
Oh, there it is now.
Yeah, there it is. Exactly.
But okay, wait. So I want to back up because Star Mobile, you are the ones like because let's talk about what you do and kind of frame this context. You're a software company and you have this idea that you can basically put any app on any device. Like you don't need to write. I think, you know, the quote is like, why would anyone ever want to build a mobile app? you already have all these apps that exist, or desktop apps or web apps, whatever, and you can help make them work well on mobile devices.
Well, you're right, and let me. It might be helpful to put in context for you a little bit, maybe of the history of Star Mobile and kind of how we came about might help
to
frame this up a bit.
I literally never heard of you. You've got someone who tweets a lot on your behalf, so that's good. But I literally never heard of you before Bryforum.
Well, I'll duly noted, and I will go beat my marketing team later on that point. But
right, we're around. Jack.
Yeah. Jack's heard of you.
So here's kind of the background is that, you know, I've been in the technology sector for a long time. I'm kind of an old dog. I largely have been around the enterprise application space, but moreover have been in the enterprise mobility space really the last 7 or 8 years. And I won't bore you with my CV. I'm a former PeopleSoft and Oracle exec. I was CEO of a company called CAS that we almost sold to SAP, but we actually sold to Accenture. But it was from the due diligence process with SAP, I got to know the principals there, where I then subsequently came on board and was part of the due diligence team that led to the Sybase acquisition. And as a derivative of Sybase, SAP acquired both the Afaria MDM EMM platform and also acquired the Sybase Unwired MIAP platform, and then launched the global enterprise mobility business for SAP, where over the course of 3 years, we effectively turned the process of extending SAP out to mobile and turned it into the slowest, most complex, and most expensive proposition on the planet. And so we effectively recreated the experience of implementing SAP. And
just on mobile.
Just on mobile, and which is the antithesis of what we all want on mobile. So I left about 3.5 years ago, and I left it that even though SAP was actually successful in that over that period had sold nearly €750,000 of enterprise mobility application software, it only had an 11% adoption rate. And the reason for that was because the solution was slow, complex, and expensive. So I left 3.5 years ago with the notion that the market needed something different. And I was then subsequently introduced to a gentleman who is today our CTO, Regyapathy Sivakumar, or he makes it easy. He goes by the name of Siva. Siva is a working professor at Georgia Tech. He leads the mobile computing and network research group at Tech. It's one of the top such research groups in the land. And he had a couple of enterprising PhD students, and they started with a thesis. Enterprise mobility is slow, complex, and expensive. And like good PhD students, they set about solving that. And when I saw the core IP of Star Mobile, albeit it was in its nascent, you know, science experiment state, there was this great eureka moment because I saw that it solved not only the problem we saw at SAP, but across the industry about extending the existing investment in enterprise applications out to mobile devices quickly, simply, and inexpensively. So yada yada, Star Mobile was born in April of 2012. We've been off the races since then. We issued our first commercial release in the fall of 2012 with Star Mobile 1.0. We completed that journey from nascent technology to enterprise-class product under grants from the Georgia Research Alliance and the National Science Foundation. So if you're starting a new company, it's nothing better than free money that's non-dilutive. You don't have to pay back, right? So our tax dollars at work. But moreover, we came out of stealth mode in the fall of 2013 when there was a round that was led by U.S. Venture Partners. We also have a strategic investor, the Web Investment Network. Maynard Webb is the current chair of Yahoo. He's on the board of Salesforce and Visa. He's the former CEO of eBay. Tremendous team there. We also have other minor investors with the Georgia Research Alliance Venture Fund and the Atlanta Technology Angels and a group called ComSouth. But, you know, over the course of time, you know, we've, you know, taken and it's been a great journey as we've directed this technology towards solving this problem we see in the marketplace, which begs then, what are we? So Star Mobile is a codeless, cloud-based enterprise mobility solution. And to be clear, our platform provides a company with the means that we can deliver any application to any endpoint with a native user experience, faster, simpler, and at a lower cost than any other solution on the planet. So fundamentally, that's what we do. And I know there's that probably begs a lot of questions as to how we do it and so forth. But let me just maybe stop there and see how you want to direct this.
Yeah, okay, right. So faster, you know, we can deliver native experience faster, simpler, with lower cost. Makes sense. Podcast over.
Well, drop the mic.
Yeah. okay, so you're mobile. And first of all, you're talking about, you know, codeless, cloud-based enterprise mobility solution, any app. So you're targeting, let me back up on this. You're targeting taking existing desktop apps, Windows desktop apps, and web apps, and taking those that work fine on your laptop and making them work on tablets and phones.
At a high level, absolutely right. And maybe the best way I can describe it is maybe then kind of tell you how Star Mobile works.
Yeah.
And kind of in, we'll do this, you know, I'm doing this, audibly without the use of slides. So let me see if I can pull this off. So the way that Star Mobile works is it relies upon what is our core IP, which is something called the Morph protocol. And I know you guys, you know, you're experts around the virtualization space and, you know, remote computing protocols such as at the core of Citrix and VMware have been around for a very long time, where they effectively revisualize pixels from one endpoint to another. Star Mobile, the Morph protocol is something that is truly different in that if you back me into a corner, I would say it's a next-generation virtualization technology. And so what Star Mobile does is as follows. Let's use an example of, say, where you wanted to mobilize SAP. Well, today, the way that you might connect with SAP from your laptop is that you pull out your laptop, establish connectivity, VPN in, go through your single sign-on, and ultimately get to a page view of the application. The way that you would use Star Mobile to mobilize that particular application would be as follows. First, what Star Mobile does is out of the cloud, we effectively proxy the PC user. So we appear to the back-end application as if we're you in front of a PC. We're able to preserve or enhance the existing secure pathway to the back-end application. So, you know, whether it's VPN, single sign-on, if we want to integrate with Active Directory, we can do all of those elements. But ultimately, we get to the page view of the back-end application, in this case, say, of SAP. Then what Morph does is out of the face of the application, it fundamentally decomposes it down to its constituent Lego block parts, is the way I like to say it. It's the data and workflow elements of the application interface. And it brings those elements back into the cloud through a process that's called fingerprinting, where we effectively catalog those elements. Star Mobile is then front-ended with something called Star Mobile Studio. And what Studio is, it's a what you see is what you mobilize visual editor that allows somebody with basic IT or even business analyst skills, it presents them with a view of the as-is application and then a palette of the to-be mobile device that you want to build an app for, together with a palette of transformations, UI elements, and the elements that have been cataloged through the fingerprinting process. And then through a simple drag-and-drop process, it drives the scripting behind a very powerful transformation engine. That transformation engine has actually 12 different unique classes of transformations that can be applied to these elements. You know, one example would be a transformation is called reduction. And reduction is a fancy word for an SAP screen might have 52 fields on it, yet for a given workflow, you might need to use 3 fields and hit return. So why would you deliver 52 fields to the endpoint? So reduction is a fancy word that says, what am I going to use versus what am I going to leave on the shelf? Another one is called federation. And federation is one where, you know, I could query, say, system A for a lookup on a part number and take the result and query system B, a distinctly different system, for a price lookup on that part number and bring those holistically together. But the ultimate transformation is, how do I take these elements that were originally rendered for consumption on a PC screen and render them for consumption on whatever the specific endpoint is. And that's the last step in the transformation component. These elements then are shipped agnostically to the endpoint where there is a single client that exists, whether it's on a smartphone, a tablet, a PC, or a watch. And then what that client serves to do is it has two jobs. The first job is it renders a native user experience that is specific to that endpoint. So the client knows that it's on a iPhone 6 Plus as opposed to a 6, as opposed to a Samsung Galaxy or an iPad or a Windows 10 device. And it then takes advantage of the specific screen resolution and such that's specific to that endpoint. The other job that it does is it integrates with the native device features of that device. So it can integrate with the speech to text, the accelerometer, the GPS, the camera, all those elements that you can, you know, typically expose that you can use via an SDK. And at the end of the day, what we're able to do is dynamically transform any back-end application to any endpoint and delivering that native user experience with native device integration. On the back end, it could be truly any application. It could be your classic on-premises packaged applications like SAP or Oracle or IBM or Microsoft. It could be a cloud-based application like Salesforce or Workday. And just because you're cloud doesn't mean you're mobile. In fact, the worst mobile app that I have on my device is actually the Salesforce app. It could be a bespoke or custom-built application that was purpose-built for the enterprise, where it could be web-based, could be .NET or Win32, could be Java. It could also be green screens, and there are a lot of green screens that are still out there. So we truly can take any application to any endpoint with and deliver this native experience. Now, last comments is that what I just described is something where we're leveraging the existing investment of applications that support a business by going through the front door. What we also have the means to do is to go through the back door. So we can actually go direct, basically serve in the same capacity as an MBAS. So we can integrate with APIs and data connectors or SQL or web services and such and go directly to those that don't actually have an application in support of them. We can apply net new logic to truly develop mobile-first applications, or we can actually do a hybrid of both. I could actually say query an existing application like SAP and extract elements of that, but also go through the back door, say maybe hit a database directly, and bring those together, again, bringing them to create a holistic app to the end user. So at a very high level, that is how Star Mobile works, and our true value prop goes to the fact that we take any application to any endpoint, deliver a native user experience with native device integration, but we're also doing this without any coding, without the need to engage exotic skills, and there's a whole myriad of other benefits around this type of an approach.
And so the so you look at the applications running and are able to sort of decompose it like down into, I'll call it like the Windows Forms elements. So you know this is a text field, this is a Dropbox, this is a radio button, this is a scroll field with images, and then that's where you're able to sort of intelligently not send pixels down, not a remote picture of the drop-down box, but you can, that comes available in the designer tool when you sort of build the non-tech person builds the layout, and then the client device renders like a native proper, drop-down box with the data behind it, just like it was on the original app.
Correct. What we can effectively do is decompose, say, on the existing back-end PC-based application. If there might be a drop-down box, well, of course, we can then maybe map that to where it might be a spinner wheel on the mobile device in terms of the selection set accordingly. But you're directionally spot on, which is that, we look at the elements and the various components that are, examine those that are in the back-end application, and then you can apply, again, any one of 12 different types of transformations to these things, but also ultimately marry them with the UI elements that are appropriate for the specific endpoint.
By the way, I'm going to quote you on that as my LinkedIn. I am directionally spot on.
please, by all means.
So, that's your new title.
Yeah, directionally spot on. Fantastic.
This Mine's is like continuously employed since 2004. You're directionally spot on. Like, yeah, not abusing LinkedIn at all.
Directionally spot on. This is, first of all, as a concept, I love this. Citrix had something called Project Vertigo. Have you heard of this? In 1999 or 2000, we now jokingly refer to it as Project Where'd It Go? And it was something along the same lines as this, where it was going out to Palm OS or Windows CE. But it would take your WinForms-based apps and allow you to sort of relay them out and this sort of be transformed to the mobile devices. This is something that has, the people in the desktop virtualization kind of Citrix VMware world have been wanting this for a long, long time. And I've talked with various people about doing something like this over the past, 10 years. And there's always different talk about that'd be awesome. It would be really, really hard. But it sounds like that's the challenge you guys are taking on.
Well, it is. And, again, you guys certainly have the deeper tribal history around the virtualization sector than we do. But, I will say that the kind of the notion of the high level principle of what we do, I don't know that that's unique. I think what's truly unique is the manner in which we do it. I mean, there's the depth of the technology associated with Morph, the complexity of what's going on behind the magic curtain is actually pretty impressive. But, again, at a high level, the notion is if you can take something that exists, break it down into its constituent, you know, Lego block elements, you can then rearrange and manipulate them and transform them in a variety of different ways to reassemble them at the endpoint. Now, how you do that, and how you do that also without introducing latency, how you do that where you're, you know, able to deliver it to some, you know, to the endpoint that is an experience specifically tailored to that endpoint that's not limited. And by the way, we're not doing this with HTML5. So, and as a result, we're actually able to render five times as fast to the mobile endpoint as you would if you were delivering HTML5, because you're not doing the compilation decomposition of HTML5. But more so, we're often...
So,
go ahead.
So I was just going to ask there. So that means that, you know, on my Windows phone or Android or iPhone, that it's that UI that I'll end up getting is all... It'll be all entirely, you know, the appropriate native-looking UI?
Exactly. So again, and more specifically is, you know, you're not just getting a generic iOS experience. You're getting an iOS experience that's specific to the iPhone 6 Plus as opposed to a 6, as opposed to a 4, or in any other different platform. So absolutely. And, you know, again, HTML5 has a certain attraction, right, which is that it's ubiquitous. It can flow across all devices, which fundamentally means it sucks for all devices, right? in that you're sacrificing something for that ubiquity. And what you're sacrificing is that you're having to engineer the user experience to the lowest common denominator of endpoint. But the other thing is that there are inherent limitations to HTML5 about its ability to integrate with the device characteristics of that endpoint, you know. And can you integrate with camera? Yeah, but invariably it becomes slow. It becomes dysfunctional in terms of the user experience and such. That ultimately kind of underscores the benefit of why having that localized client makes sense for us in our architecture.
So on the back end, like if you talk about the SAP example, So let's start with a desktop app. So I've got this SAP desktop client. Does that still run somewhere in Windows in some data center or some cloud somewhere?
Well, there's actually it's interesting you raise the SAP example because, you know, there's really two unique ways that you could prospectively consume SAP. SAP in its more native form, I'll argue that SAP still has struggled to get out of three-tier client server. So there are still a vast audience of folks that consume SAP by using something that's called SAP GUI for Windows, mm-hmm. where it truly is a Windows client that exists, you know, on the PC.
I can guarantee that every listener knows about SAP GUI, as we called it. We spent years and years and years mucking around the thing, and that's a lot of us probably have met Citrix because of that app right there.
Indeed,
Oracle has a related one.
Indeed, and I will say that, you know, SAP GUI for Windows also really has its root. It's not only just R3; it even actually has some R2 related elements of it. But invariably, there is still a population out there that, for a variety of different technical and business reasons, uses that. In that case, what we're actually doing within the cloud is we're running the thick client and using that as the basis for interrogating the back end. Now, there's an alternate means that you could actually consume SAP, and that's where in NetWeaver you invoke something called SAP GUI for HTML,
yeah.
where it effectively turns the SAP application pages into HTML pages. And actually, it's a pretty simple process, and there is clearly a migration towards consuming SAP in that manner. In that particular case, what we're doing out of the cloud is we're actually running a headless browser to use that as the basis for the extraction elements of SAP. And going back to, again, how Star Mobile works, you know, all of the elements of the stages of Morph, going from the proxy and extract to the fingerprinting to the virtualization to transformation and ultimately to the rendering steps, all of which happens virtually instantaneously, it's the one element that is unique, dependent upon the back end, which is the proxy and extract step, that is unique to the specific back end technology. So if it's web-based, we're running a headless browser for the extraction component. If we're doing Win32, you know, or .NET, we're running the thick client component. If we're doing green screen, for example, we're running a 3270, 5250 type terminal emulator. That's kind of how this is working.
Let me jump in with so regarding Windows. So if you're running like the thick Windows client version of that Windows application, does this mean that I have to have, you know, I as the customer, I have to have, you know, some RDSH set up for this, or You know, do you set that up, and you know, or how does that work? Because it seems that there's that step in there somewhere, and the question is if this is something that my company, I was already, you know, my current strategy was to run it locally on my laptops. Well, you know, if my user's laptop is in their bag, turned off, and because they're on their mobile device, then that obviously doesn't work. So the question is, I mean, obviously we all know how big of a commitment, or you know, various types of desktop virtualization is. So does that mean that we have to get into this now, or does the Star Mobile cloud platform take care of all of that?
Yeah, the short answer is that the cloud platform takes care of that for you. So, and the shorter answer to this is that, you know, you can employ this with any myriad of back end without any changes to the back end or without any, you know, specific setups. And it really comes back to the fact is that it is part of configuring and setting up Star Mobile. It's really more of a matter of setting up the ability, the connectivity capabilities to the back end, and then the ability to, within our cloud, deploy whatever client that you might use to interrogate that back end. And again, it could be, in the case of web, it's the, you know, a headless browser, in effect, is the client that's running. If in the case of a Windows-based application, it's running a facsimile of whatever client that would be running on the PC. But otherwise, you don't have to invoke any changes in terms of the connectivity of how it communicates with the existing back end.
Right. But so does that mean that it's almost like so we have our clients that we have deployed for our traditional desktop users, and now we have to deploy the clients so they can be in line in that Star Mobile process as well. And like, are there licensing issues in there? And it's like, if okay, we, you know, we're patching the client or whatever, or doing updates besides all the desktop ones, you know, then we have to do the clients that are there in line for Star Mobile?
Well, a great question. You know, with respect to licensing implications, I mean, it goes back to whatever, you know, that customer's agreement might be with whomever their existing provider may be, right? It could be that they have per-seat licensing. It could be they have an enterprise-wide license and such around that. Where you don't have, you know, in most cases, license issues here is that, you know, more times than not, most customers are effectively being licensed by the end user, which actually gives them the ability to connect to the back-end application from any myriad of endpoints. You know, right now, most licenses are written in a manner where I could actually use a back-end application from my PC, or I go down the hall and use somebody else's and such. You know, it's really about your single sign-on really is your license in effect. And so what Star Mobile really is it just, you know, a different communication means to be able to access that existing user seat that you have. Now, in the, you know, and that typically works in the form of where you're using a web, you know, something that's web-based. Where it gets a little bit different is when you do have a thick client application that you have to run. And there may be certain things that are, you know, CPU-based in terms of license, or could be end-user-based and such. I just would have to defer, as, you know, your mileage may vary, just dependent upon what your license implications are. Now, what I will say is that when we built Star Mobile, our OEM cloud is Amazon Web Services, and we did it for a couple reasons. One is it is ubiquitous. It's really inexpensive. Our server technology actually runs on what are Windows Server 2008 virtual machines. And so, you know, we're able to, you know, infinitely provision those in support of our customers. And as part of those virtual machine costs with Amazon, all of the, you know, the licensing associated with the operating system and such that defines that virtual machine is part of that virtual machine instance cost with Amazon. And that's pretty consistent with how most similar cloud providers work. Now, at the same time, we do have the means that we could put Star Mobile on any public cloud, so it doesn't have to be Amazon Web Services. It could be put on any private virtual cloud that you carve out of a public cloud, or we can put it behind the firewall into the customer's environment as well. It really comes back to, you know, what their propensity is, and we find that in some more regulated industries, such as healthcare or financial services and such, there is a preference to be able to, you know, put it, kind of run home to mama and put it behind the firewall is the way I like to characterize it. So we can support any of those environments. But again, dependent upon what the licensing agreement the customer may have, there could potentially be certain licensing agreement licensing implications with the elements that ultimately comprise the environment the Star Mobile runs in.
Is everything you do is it's funny, by the way, everything you're saying makes sense in the normal world and probably applies to most software vendors except for Microsoft, I would imagine. So I can see that sort of application licensing, you know, is pretty straightforward. Do most of your customers tend to focus on point applications? Like, what I mean is, you know, this is like with your infrastructure that runs, if I need some full Windows GUI clients that are running in, you know, in the cloud, can I install multiple of those on the same instance? Like, I'm saying, if I've got two or three different applications I want to mobilize, are you using like actual standalone, like one VM per user, or are you using something like RDSH, or are you using something like it's not called Virtuoso, Odin now, I guess, something like that, just to sort of separate out so you can have multiple instances of these applications running?
You're asking specifically about Windows applications here too, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Because otherwise the web stuff is a headless browser, but yeah, in terms of Windows applications, which is, you know, that's Brian and mine's background. So, I mean,
right,
there's some web apps and stuff in there as well. But Windows applications are, you know, we can breathe new life into these things that are really terrible to work with in a mobile way today.
Right.
So that's what the question I think stems from, is like how are we doing this Windows? How are we transforming Windows applications, and what's the back end look like? Is it multiple sessions or multiple apps per session or that sort of thing?
Where do they live, and how do we manage them? And
got it. So let me maybe give some foundational things around this. So, you know, what is again happening within our cloud? I'll even step back further. When you were to launch an app from the endpoint desktop, you know, say from your iPhone, you click on an icon that represents the specific app that is based on Star Mobile. Keep in mind, there is no logic that exists on the endpoint device. All that really is a graphic that tells the Star Mobile cloud three fundamental things. It is, what backend am I going to establish connectivity to? What type of virtual machine am I going to invoke during the course of that specific app session? And then lastly, what are the rules that have been predefined that define this particular app? Okay. So, you know, what happens then is you click on that, the Star Mobile cloud establishes connectivity to whatever the back end in. It could be an open, you know, URL. It could be, we could have a dedicated, you know, private pipe into it, however we may do that. The next step is, in terms of what, you know, what we set up in terms of the virtual machine environment, this is where then, based upon what the app's been defined on, we not only take what we're doing at any given time is we're running a hot pool of virtual machines that are in a standby state. So they're just there running, they're already spooled up, and we're grabbing one of those and kind of bringing it in line. You can almost think about the way that we treat these virtual machines. It's almost like port allocation, because effectively that's what it's doing, is we're grabbing that virtual machine during the course of this particular session and bringing it in line for the user end-to-end. And then what we're also grabbing is an agent that is specific to the back-end endpoint, whether it's that agent is the headless browser, whether it's the thick client that needs to be run for this, whether it's the green screen terminal emulator, whatever that may be, that is then working together with the Star Mobile server. So it is that agent that is actually then brokering how we're doing the decomposition and interrogation of the back end and presenting those elements then to the server that's going through the ensuing steps of the morph transformation. Now, that session lives during the course of when the user's using the app. And then when that session is done, we're basically taking that virtual machine and putting it back into the hot pool. So it's in a ready state that others can come in and grab it and use it during the course of their session. So what we are doing is we're doing an allocation of a virtual machine that is tied to a specific user session. But, and again, I go back to the analogy of using port allocation. We have one specific customer who they have 103,000 users in 102 countries. And you would instantly think, oh, my God, a one-to-one VMI per user session with this. The reality is that at their peak of the nth hour around the globe, they're actually able to do this with 63 simultaneous sessions. And it's kind of like the old, statistics T-distribution or P01 grade of service. I go way upstream to the time-sharing days, so I'm conjuring synapses here that I haven't used for a while. But basically, what you're able to do is you're able to do provisioning with a modest subset of the number of machines that you need at a given time to support that user population. Now, one thing that we have not done yet, which we do intend to do in our kind of immediate product roadmap, is the ability for us to leverage a virtual machine across a number of different users. The reason we haven't done it yet, and we kind of deprioritized in the product roadmap, one was it was purely economical. We are running a virtual machine instance via Amazon right now for about 5 cents an hour. So to slice that up, there wasn't a huge financial implication for us in order to do that. The other is actually, quite frankly, as we talk to the chief security officers at companies or CIOs and such, they actually like this notion that there is this one-to-one correlation. They like the fact that we're session-based today because when the session goes away, the data is not being persisted. They don't have to worry about it having an afterlife, and they don't have to worry about their bits being mixed up with others within a particular virtual machine. So it's something that's worked for us to date. We've also done a lot of work around this architecture that around the scalability. So we actually, out of this particular type of an approach, we basically have found that we have infinite scalability around the approach that we've taken to this to date. But we do see at a point in time that, particularly as we have more customers that might actually want to put this into their own cloud behind the firewall, having the ability to leverage those virtual machines across a broader user population would be something that might be attractive to them. So that kind of, at least foundationally, is kind of what's going on here within the cloud.
So if I want to use a Windows app, how does that work? Like, do you give me an AMI and then I connect to it and install my app and then I set up all the, sort of mapping to configure how it's going to look on different devices? Or is this something where you guys are doing this and it's only sort of specific apps you've already done this for?
No, it's the former, not the latter. I mean, and again, what you have is the ability in using Studio is Studio gives you the ability to do all of the associated setup with that Windows application, how you basically set up and you would deploy the client that and how that gets set up relative to the Star Mobile server within the cloud, but also Studio is the basis where you also set up that means of communicating between the Star Mobile cloud and the back-end application that client's talking to.
And then from that standpoint, so I just sort of get that all set up and if it's running AWS, there may be, who knows what, I've got to have my VPN connection to my data and I've got all that sort of stuff. I sort of get that all rolling. And then your platform handles just, spinning those up and down as I need.
That's correct. We're taking care of all the dynamic provisioning of those machine instances as needed based on demand. And something that we built into our architecture is our ability to, we're able to look at holistically across all of our customers, but even within an individual customer, we're able to look at historical usage patterns so that we're constantly monitoring to ensure that we're always provisioning in time a number of virtual machines to ensure. I mean, the last thing you ever want.
Oh
is
yeah, that
wants
you don't
to
have to. You don't have to sell us on that because we get that in our industry. We've been doing that forever. And same with the whole thing about being able to save money by since we're only using concurrent. Obviously we've got a lot fewer concurrent users than we do total users.
Right.
We've been doing that for a long time too, so we are way on board with that. When I'm buying this stuff, I assume I'm paying you, and you're handling the relationship with AWS and paying them and everything. And so, is it per app or per user, or you know, is it more expensive for Windows apps versus web apps?
No, actually. So again, in a high level, our pricing, it starts at $5 per user per month. That allows the customer to use the platform to create an unlimited number of mobile apps. So we are SaaS-based pricing. That SaaS-based pricing, though, also allows you, you know, it transcends whether you want to use our OEM network of, you know, AWS, or if you want to put it in your own, another public network, or you want to put it behind the firewall in your own cloud. The pricing remains the same. We are not app per app pricing. Again, it's based upon user. And invariably, you know, I'll give you one example. We were working with one customer who is one of the largest snack food companies in the world, for example. And there we're working with actually a third-party SI partner where we're providing the platform, and they're actually providing the human capital that's involved to configure and maintain apps based upon the Star Mobile platform. In that particular instance, you know, we're actually able to deliver to the customer both the platform SaaS costs plus the human capital, the professional services through this partner, to where we're actually delivering apps at a price point of 8 cents per user per app per month. So if you kind of step back and think about that, we're actually delivering rich enterprise mobile apps to the constituents of this customer at prices that are less than iTunes-like, which is simply unheard of in this sector.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to make statistics work in your favor. I'm not from the pricing standpoint. I'm just saying that's great, but you know, the technology is more impressive to us than the pricing, I think. Does the pricing you pay per? I assume your $5 per month starting point includes a certain number of hours, right? It's not unlimited, and then you sort of, so you're paying per user, and that gives you, you know, whatever, 10 hours or something like that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it in terms of, you know, a web app is a lot different than a Windows app in terms of licensing and resources required. And so for spinning up RDS sessions to run a full client for a Windows app and then transforming that, that's going to require RDS cals, and that requires, you know, Windows and not just, you know, a virtual browser running in a Linux server somewhere. So you would think that there'd be some difference there in cost, and maybe not. Maybe you've got the secret formula figured out.
Although Windows, I'm looking on AWS pricing, because you said, you know, Todd, you mentioned like 5 cents an hour, and I'm like, what? And I can't believe it. It's so freaking cheap on Amazon. AWS, you can get a one vCPU and 2 gigs of RAM for 3.6 cents per hour.
Wow.
Yeah,
and that's for on demand. That's something for reserved instances.
You're right, exactly. And so, you know, we become extremely nimble at our ability to purchase and advance elements around that to manipulate, you know, again, what our cost basis is of our OEM cloud. But even then, again, you know, if you look at some of the leading providers around that, you'll note that they're fairly, at least in structure, they're fairly comparable. And oh, by the way, that includes the licensing to where you're having a fully functioning Windows Server, you know, 2008. You know, virtual machine, right? So there's not any hidden costs associated. The only thing I would say here is, no, we don't differentiate. There's no differential pricing based upon the back end. The only things that, you know, could prospectively be an adder from us is if you actually do want to carve out a private virtual network here where there might be a dedicated connection. There are some modest adders based upon the particular cloud provider to have that, if you will, almost dedicated VPN capability to the back end, where you're now literally extending the network boundary out to the cloud as opposed to the firewall. The other is that I can't really speak to, because it would be so situational on the customer, is if for the particular client application that you need to run, say, and again, in a Windows realm, if based upon your license arrangement with whomever that application provider is, you know, we always have to, you know, we ourselves or our customers, we always say you need to be compliant with your licensing costs. So, you know, there's sometimes where there might be a cost per client that needs to run within the cloud, or it might be based upon their licensing arrangements. It could be something that's already covered in our enterprise agreement. It just depends.
But okay, so to back up, to be clear, the pricing, you have a per hour charge also, right? Like it starts at $5 per month, you know, per user, whatever, but that gives you X number of hours, or that's unlimited?
No, it is unlimited. It is unlimited. And in the philosophy here, again, so yes, you know, our pricing starts at $5 per user per month. That gives that enterprise the ability to build an unlimited number of apps. And part of the premise here is, guess what? You can really only use one app at a time. Yeah. So there is no cap per se. And again, part of that is that we found is that the personas of users across this are, you know, typically ones in mobile as opposed to a PC. Mobile is not something where you basically log on and stay on all day because, you know, you usually are looking to do a specific workflow, specific transaction, and so forth. You're not just going to sit there and bang away with it all day. If you do, you're going to deplete your radio and your battery and all that kind of stuff really, really quickly. But we could certainly do that. So we're not distinguishing. There's no hour adder associated with that. But what we do want, what we're trying to encourage our customers to do is actually standardize on Star Mobile for the vast majority of their enterprise needs. And that's where, you know, as I cited before, in terms of the overall cost performance, you know, your marginal cost for each additional app that you use with Star Mobile is effectively nothing other than what might be the modest human capital it takes to do these configurations of an app. And again, there are we have the means by which we can, you know, give our customers the fishing pole and teach them to fish that they can use Star Mobile Studio and do this autonomously. They can work with one of our partners like IBM or HP or others that can actually do those configurations for them, or we can provide those capabilities. But, you know, again, unlike other platforms where, you know, I'll pick on my friends at SAP again. You know, at SAP, if you spend $1 on the platform, you're spending $3 on professional services to install it, build things on it, maintain and support those apps. We're the antithesis. If you spend $1 with Star Mobile, you're typically spending a nickel to a dime in human capital to configure, maintain, and support the apps that are built on the platform. So, you know, the human capital, the professional service component is very, very modest. But the takeaway there is that's really your only variable cost. If once you invest in the platform for app number one, app number two, your marginal cost is very, very minimal. And hence you have a declining marginal cost over time as you deploy this across a myriad of apps within your portfolio.
Well, and can I use that Star Mobile Studio on my local desktop to get it all set up, the app?
Studio is actually HTML-based, so it's web-based. So there is no means to actually just run it autonomously on your PC and such. So it's something that actually exists and talks to actively our cloud in terms of how these configurations are done. Now, it does have the ability to integrate, like if you today have certain design tools that you like that you use to design the UI that you have for how you define this within your enterprise, we can actually integrate with those elements and take some of those templates to feed into Studio. But more specifically, Studio is HTML web-based today.
All right, sorry, Jack, you were saying?
Oh, so I was going to say on the client application side, I think we've been talking for a while and in past podcasts and such, and how we're envisioning this mobile world. Like, of course, since we're talking making task-specific applications that have many fewer functions than desktop applications, we're picturing a future world where there are many rapidly evolving, based on user feedback and such, much faster built task-based applications. And so, that SAP GUI that could have 53 different buttons in it, that could be like a dozen different applications, mobile applications that are sent out to the end users.
Well, I think what you're kind of stating here is something that we actually see all the time. We coach our customers that is something that's platform independent. And that is that we often see folks begin to make the mistake where they actually try to recreate in their mobile application all the full functionality of what's in the back end. And, the reason we all like mobile is that we can get things done in 3 to 5 clicks with our right thumb, as opposed to having to go through, 12 sequential screens that takes 11 minutes to navigate, right? And so, part of the art of apps is how do you make these things very workflow specific instead of the full feature-rich functionality of whatever the specific backend is. And there are elements of Star Mobile Morph technology around our transformations that we can actually help to take applications that are, again, very feature-rich, or take many, many screens or windows in order to be able to navigate through to get to the result, and how we can minimize those down to just the specific workflow elements that are inherent to whatever it is that you want this app to do. We have one specific customer where they were actually, I hate to pick on SAP all day here, but was using SAP SRM for purchase order approvals for managers approving purchase orders submitted by their direct reports. And that required them to VPN in, go through single sign-on, and ultimately navigate through 12 sequential screens that took 11 minutes to navigate to say, Jack, you can have a PC, Brian, you can't have a printer, Gabe, you certainly can't have a 3D printer. And so, there we were actually able to extend that out to mobile across, smartphone, tablet, and PC. The customer was able to do this within 3 days. But moreover, we were able to actually use elements of our transformation technology to dummy that down to where you could render the same result in 3 to 5 clicks and in 27 seconds to navigate. And there's a whole variety of different elements of those transformation components that allow us to be able to effectively dummy that down. There is a whole, art and line of thinking around. We have one particular customer who they're actually taking what is a myriad of applications on the back end. So they're taking actually, of all things, they're taking legacy Oracle PeopleSoft, Oracle Taleo, SAP HR, and SAP SuccessFactors together with two external benefit systems and trying to put this into an employee self-service portal that, oh, by the way, they want to extend to mobile. A myriad of different elements. Now, you don't create that in one app, right? What I just described, one application could give rise to as many as 4 to 10 unique workflows. And those workflows could be based on a specific persona, right? It could be, a sales rep versus a sales manager. It could be an individual contributor. It could be an executive. All of which actually have the same back-end application that we can actually create individualized apps associated with that. So there's a lot here to how you actually want to create apps based upon this particular persona of the end user.
Yeah, that's my question. But it is possible for you to create separate, I'll call them apps, several mobile apps out of a single desktop app in the back end.
Absolutely. And again, it goes back to it could be role based. It could be it could be workflow specific.
Can I get into you talk about, and I think you mentioned this, the back door and the front door using those at the same time. Can I have multiple front doors at the same time? Like if I have two apps that are both, I've got like two Windows desktop apps and I want to sort of pull elements of those and then recombine them into one mobile app. So I have like sort of these, both these apps are running, the Windows clients in the cloud, but my mobile app is pulled from both of them simultaneously.
Yeah. The short answer is yes. So we could have an infinite number of back-end applications that you could query themselves of a myriad of different architectures. So one could be web-based, one could be Win32-based, one could be green screen, one could be Java-based, one could be backdoor, or any of one of those. And again, part of what we can do is bring all of those together seamlessly into a singular mobile app for the user, and they don't know what's going on, in behind the screens. Now, one other element too, going back to your notion of, kind of the personas and the end user, and I'll kind of foreshadow where we're going with this technology, is that, we've kind of surfed this wave from, what was, coding for mobile to now codeless for mobile. And where we're actually going is something that is automatic for mobile. And here, kind of follow me a bit, we've already worked out the technology that allows us to examine how people consume existing applications from their desktop. So in essence, we can actually monitor those and gather the usage characteristics associated with that and then feed an agent that then automatically creates the mobile app. And we can do that either for a specific class of users, say sales reps as opposed to sales managers, or we can actually do that for a specific user, because as a sales rep, you might consume it in one way versus this sales rep might be a different way, and you get an app that is specifically tailored to how you use this. This is something that's in our product roadmap that will debut next year. And one of the elements of where we'd like to go with this is take that type of an approach to where we could integrate it effectively at the hypervisor level, to where we could actually look at how people that are using desktop virtualization and gain those same characteristics around how they're consuming the back-end application today and use that information to be able to feed how we're doing the automatic creation of the app. So, and it's not as Buck Rogers as it may sound, but what it does is invariably our mission is we actually want to eliminate the human capital that's required to configure any app, and that's kind of our pathway and our product vision around how we're going with this.
And so now you talked about selling your first, you know, sort of 1.0 product back in fall of 2012, right? So we're talking like 3 years ago.
Correct.
So where are you now? Like product, do you have versions of products, or is it just kind of continuously?
Well, we just as of June 30th, we debuted Star Mobile 3.0. We've actually had 10 minor releases, and this is our third major release. So, you know, we're typically doing a dot X every quarter, and we're doing an X dot, you know, once a year. And with the advent of Star Mobile 3.0, a couple things came forward. One is it is the advent of Studio. So, you know, it fulfills kind of that. In our journey, we did a couple of things. We first focused on having a very powerful transformation engine and all the elements of what defined Morph. The next thing we did is we wanted to be able to extend that transformation engine to any back-end application and building out those components. The next step was then our ability to be able to ultimately put the autonomy into the hands of the customer that they could build apps using Star Mobile unto themselves. And then, you know, kind of where we're going in the course of this journey is on the product horizon, as I mentioned, is kind of going towards this automorph type capability. But moreover, also in that product roadmap is ultimately we'd also like to be able to provide offline capabilities as well. Offline has certain nuances because obviously we have to replicate the data and the logic of what's being done elsewhere, and synchronization is ultimately the elegant component of that. But we do see certain use cases that lend themselves towards that. That is kind of where we're going. So 3.0 actually brings, it's a foundational step towards us in advancing that product roadmap going forward.
Well, let me tell you what, man. Offline, good luck. That would be amazing.
I've been down that path before, and actually, you know, I have to give props to the SAP folks, because if you do need a rich solution that has offline capabilities and so forth, you know, then that's not a bad. The MIApps are not a bad platform to do that.
Yeah, regrettably, that's tough. Like, that's one specific sort of platform, like making something that's more universal, because like client server apps, there's a million different things they need, and trying to tackle that market broadly. By the way,
it's 3% of the addressable market. Yeah. However, what I will say is, and the example I like to use there all the time is direct store delivery in the consumer product space. So if, say, you're with a beer company and, you know, it's guys driving the beer truck that are taking the inventory into the truck and delivering to the store, and it's order to cash, and it's routing and dispatch, and it's cash collection and so forth, they go in and out of signal range. And when they get back in signal range, you want to bang away to localized database and then sync when you're back in range. There's, you know, approaches to that. But what I just described, that's also a $30 million application. So yeah. Even though that might be 3% of the addressable market, sometimes these are the most important and impactful. They're the most customer-facing, most revenue-generating applications that justifies that investment. What we've tried to approach this is, let's go with the lower-hanging fruit. You know, we think that our solution addresses 85 to 90% of the needs of enterprise, and then over time chip away at those residual components. And that's how we prioritize our product roadmap accordingly.
So what happens when things don't work? Because, you know, there have been attempts at this in the past to sort of, again, extract out of – and again, like, obviously everything we're talking about is Windows-based, like, because that's the world that we live in, like Gabe and me and Jack – well, not so much Jack, but like in our audience – so web apps, I can see it's easier to extract because you've got like actual HTML, and you can sort of like see the source code, quote unquote, you know, between CSS and HTML, and green screen, same with that. The Windows apps, some of them use the proper Microsoft WinForms, other ones use, you know, some Adobe Flex or Java or God knows what. Like, you know, Citrix had this thing called speed screen latency reduction in the 1990s. And it was nice because it did the same kind of thing where it could identify form fields and then like render fonts locally on the client. So you got like instantaneous font, like typing feedback.
Right.
But that required you to sort of like identify the hooks, like the form, the, you know, Windows control names and that kind of stuff. And ironically, the one application that didn't work with was Microsoft Office, because Microsoft did not build Office using like the typical, you know, Visual Studio Designer, Forms Designer, and that kind of stuff. So I imagine that this happens. Like, what happens when you're going through this and sort of trying to figure out how to morph these controls? Great name, by the way. And there's some controls you just can't hook. I just can't see these things. Then what?
Well, a couple ways. I think in there was your question really is, you know, what happens when things break? And so there's a couple ways I can kind of address that. You know, one is that we originally started, in order to maintain the service level agreements we have with our customers, we built something that's called Star Mobile Dashboard. And Dashboard was something that was, you know, designed originally for us to be able to monitor, you know, if something breaks, where does it break? And you kind of think about mobile, there's lots of potential points of failure, in fact, even more so than with PC, because you've got, you know, mobile device, you've got broadband, you've got this cloud thing, you've got this back-end connectivity, you've got back-end application and reverse trip. And where within all that stack of things, you know, where'd something break? So Dashboard was originally designed for us to be able to say, if there's latency or if there's some, you know, issue the customer has, where can we identify this? And so what Dashboard has is we actually have logging at the mobile device. We have the ability to measure transit times of each of those components within that. We can see when users come in, what mobile OS they have, from what location they have, with what carrier. We can see I/O. We can see page views on the back end. All of these different things we originally designed to be able to help support our customers. We actually had one customer who, when they saw this, they're like, wow, I want that. And so we actually, with Star Mobile 3.0, we actually now have provide a dashboard as a capability as part of the licensing cost of Star Mobile, where you can see all of this on a monitor in real time and see, you know, how many users across a given app or your entire portfolio of apps. And it's really cool because not only do we provide detailed statistics that people often don't know about the back-end application, but more so, a lot of customers are using this to see what the adoption is. You know, a lot of solutions you can see, oh, somebody downloaded the app, but are they really using it? How are they using it? And so forth. And so Dashboard is one means that we can actually identify when something breaks, where does it break? Another thing that we're able to do is, again, keep in mind, Star Mobile is static. It's not dynamic. So, obviously, it's not static. We are dynamic. And so what that means is that when an application is configured here, you're not just doing static mapping from this data element to this point on the mobile device. You're actually setting a set of rules and filters that could be applied towards a variety of different elements. And so 95% of the time, if there are changes to the back-end application, those changes flow seamlessly out to the mobile user without having to update the app. And in those instances where, you know, there is something where the server, the cloud doesn't know what to do with a particular element, it means typically that there just simply isn't a rule or filter that was set up for that particular element. So it's flagged to the Star Mobile Studio dashboard that allows then for somebody to come in very simply and apply the associated rule, and boom, we're back into the races. So, you know, at a high level, we're able to typically dynamically transform and accommodate any changes, because the backends constantly change, right? We're typically able to accommodate that without having to push updates and apps out to the end user. And that's kind of another way that we're able to ensure that we're providing the associated service levels to the customers. And that's where, I really have enormous respect for you guys, because I think you've given a lot of light to this, you know, this new class of providers around the app refactoring sector. But it's really that distinction between, you know, of being dynamic as opposed to static, that sometimes I just cringe at the refactoring word a little bit, because, you know, what I see Star Mobile is doing is something that's a bit more beyond the refactoring because of that dynamic transformation capability that we have.
So you call it transformation. I got to tell you, like, these words all seem the same to me. I'm going to forget these over and over. App refactoring, app transformation. What do you call? But you call it, you say what you do is app transformation.
We call it, yeah, we call it, and we are specific dynamic. I will say, I think there is an opportunity. Maybe we can have a, you know, let's name this space contest.
We try that a lot.
But maybe I can get my crack marketing team on helping to do this. But I think if you actually do go back and look at the fundamental definition of refactoring, I think it's just slightly misapplied. No disrespect to you guys, but I'd love to work collaboratively around how we best describe what this new class of offerings are, because I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the fact that I think there's some great, you know, competitors in this space. You know, I think, by the way, I love competitors because they make us better. But oh, by the way, they also validate that there's a real need and customer opportunity out there. So we really welcome it in this space. So maybe we can together come up with a good name to describe it.
Hey, I don't think that we came up with that name. I think that was like Gartner.
No, because it would have a four-letter acronym if it came from Gartner, right?
And a quadrant.
Correct.
So, okay. So you know, part of what kind of sucks about today is it's a podcast and it's just a lot of words describing what's going on. I feel like this is something, I mean, like I said, people in our space first got wind of this concept with Project Vertigo, and there's been like little, you know, hints of this kind of stuff on and off over the past 15, 16 years. And I really believe, especially for the Windows app, the Windows desktop app transformation side of things, people just have to see it. So what's next? I mean, you know, do you have like demo videos? It's not a download. Like, can I set up an account and start doing it? I mean, how do I just, you know, get my hands on it and start actually seeing this thing in action?
Yeah, great question. So the way that we have kind of approached this is that, you know, typically we have a dialogue with a customer around, you know, what their needs are. And that could either be within the IT ecosphere or sometimes it's at the line of business ecosphere. And usually we work with a customer where they identify there's a particular pain point that's acute. Hey, I just need this mobilized and such. What we're able to, you know, first, I agree with you in that I think this is a try before you buy market. I've seen way too many customers that have had to make an investment in a platform that invariably doesn't fulfill their needs, and then they have a lot of shelfware. And so what we do is that we're able to work with these customers on that pain point where within 5 business days, we can work with them to render a true production app, not just a prototype, but an app that they can take and deploy to an unlimited number of users for up to 30 days. Now, in this particular case, this is something where, you know, we fish for them instead of giving them the pole and teaching them to fish. But we do that, you know, because we want to be able to show and demonstrate the power of the platform. And invariably there, we want to get the ideas flowing around how this could be applied against a variety of different use cases. So that's typically how we engage with folks, is they kind of take the Star Mobile challenge, if you will. It's a free trial. It's no obligation. It's no risk, which a lot of customers say, well, why would I not do this? And moreover, that's the best means that we find often by just showing them how this works. It's the best means of, you know, getting things in their hands. Now, we can certainly, we have a myriad of videos and white papers and a whole variety of things that we can also apply, be able to supply to folks that also kind of fill in a lot of the details that we haven't been able to talk today about our technology and our process.
So I want to do this. I don't have any Windows desktop apps, unfortunately, but this is something I've been wanting, you know, well, again, for a long time, for this stuff to exist, and I'm just kind of curious to see it all in action.
Well, you know, what I invite is that, you know, if there's any interest amongst your listeners here today, to reach out to us directly. In fact, I'll even offer up my personal email, which is todd@starmobileinc.com, or if you want to come to our website, our website is www.starmobileinc.com. And, you know, by all means, we welcome any opportunity. If any of your audience members have a pain point on a back-end application that's particularly acute, we certainly would welcome the opportunity to do a free trial around this. And based upon, you know, what we might amass around this, we'd love to report back and let you guys monitor in real time how we're able to do this for these customers in the absence that you don't have your own instances of SAP in your back office there or your own apps that you need to get mobilized.
Well, if the universe's alignment stays how it's currently aligned, there will not be SAP in my future. So I will keep, I will take you up on that to just kind of keep in touch with what you're seeing in demos and that kind of stuff. This is really cool. So I'm glad we had this conversation today. And, you know, we've talked for more than an hour now where the time just kind of flew by, which is what happens when the stuff is actually kind of interesting. I can tell that I'm talking to like an ex, you know, sort of SAP guy when I'm talking to you. But I can also tell I'm talking to a someone who understands the technology and, you know, the mobile space and everything. So I think it's an interesting conversation for sure.
Well, I appreciate it. And again, it really has been our pleasure to get to know you folks, get to know your constituents at Briforum last week. You know, we absolutely see applicability for what we do with your constituents. And we just, you know, we're excited about the journey. We're excited about our technology. And we look forward to the continued evolution of the relationship. So thank you for the time and thank you for the opportunity to tell you more about Star Mobile today.
All right, and that is the voice of Todd Freiberger, who is the CEO of Star Mobile. And their website is starmobileinc.com, and that's also their Twitter handle. And they were a sponsor of today's podcast, so thank you for that, for that sponsorship. And of course, thank you for being at Bride Forum. To all of you for listening, thank you very much. I'm definitely excited on hearing more. We have comments on this webcast. If you're listening live, we'll get the MP3 link posted up very quickly and share any comments in the article body itself. To Jack and Gabe, thank you both for joining today. Justin, our engineer, Mariah, our project manager, thank you all. And we'll talk to you the next podcast.
Thanks, John.